And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about trends. George Ure joins us. Urban survival. Get ready for one heck of a ride on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George, you're with us tonight. George, of course, is a business consultant, financial writer, publishes the urbansurvival.com and peoplenomics.com. He has been a senior vice president of an international airline, a vocational school president, and a two-year sales and marketing assignment from a major software company. And his website, urbansurvival.com, focuses on long wave economics, and we're going to talk about all of that. But George, welcome back.
George, it's good to be here. Thank you very much.
I've got to ask you, with your experience as a senior VP with an airline, what are those folks doing now? What are they going? What's going through their heads with this missing Malaysian plane?
Yeah, the speculation is really all over the place. One line of thought has it that it's that what's out in the ocean tonight will be found to be nothing more than just ocean garbage. You know, we've literally got oceans of garbage out there.
Yeah, we do.
And another and one of the theories, especially from guys who have, you know, some familiarity with South American to U.S. operations, is that I don't know how much you know about drug trafficking, but for a while it was popular with some of the cartel types to take a small fast jet like a Lear and shadow, you know, pull up within a few thousand feet and just under a commercial airliner, fly with it into the U.S., wait till it's on descent, and then break off into an area of airspace that's not closely tracked on radar, and squawk VFR, slow your speeds down, and that's always an ongoing security problem.
Huh.
Most people don't know, you know, that kind of stuff really did go on for a while. Radar coverage has improved. Customs and Border Patrol has been much more aggressive in terms of, you know, watching aircraft that are operating in weird places and squawking VFR and running fast. But all those kinds of things are on the table. Another possibility is that just up to the northwest, you have to cross India to get there, but I think you know the countries I'm talking about. There's one that starts with a P that has nuclear weapons but does not have a delivery platform. And one line of speculation making the rounds was that perhaps because of reported fanatical leanings of a pilot, now whether those are true or not remains to be seen, but there was some speculation among some folks I know that, gee, maybe these guys figured that a Boeing 777 extended range, which can push out pretty close to 10,000 miles. I think it's like 9,700 miles with IFR reserves, might be a low-speed way to develop, to deliver nuclear weapons.
That's right.
So that's another one. Until we actually get confirmed wreckage, whether it comes out of the ocean or whether we get satellite reconnaissance out of, you know, some other part of South West Asia or wherever it went, it's really up in the air. But in the airline industry, it just really makes you nuts. I was down in the Caribbean, and every time we launched a 727 with 180 passengers on board off a 7,000-foot runway on a really hot day at maximum gross, you know, everybody in the airline business crosses their fingers and knows, you know, you were just talking to Tony Davidson about luck. You look at these situations and you know statistically your number is going to come up sometime. You just don't know when. And whether the incident involving the Malaysian jet was an accident or terrorism or hijacking or, you know, fill in the blanks, we don't definitively know. But you can almost make a scatter chart, you know, with three or four different trend channels to it. And as I go through the news, what I tend to do is I look at everything as a scatter plot, and those are some of the major points where the news stories seem to be clustering. And until we get, you know, hard data on one saying, okay, throw out those others, we won't really know.
No, we probably won't. It's all speculation.
Exactly.
So what's new with you, my friend?
Well, I've been doing a lot of study lately of what I call the 15-year problem. Don't know if you saw it, but there was a marvelous conversation with Bill Gates on the American Enterprise Institute.
Did not see it.
Ah, very interesting, because Bill Gates gets it. He's a really bright guy from a very good Seattle family. Most people don't know it, but I think his dad, if I recall, was the guy behind Metro up in the Seattle area.
Really?
That actually cleaned up Lake Washington by getting control of stormwater runoff.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, this is really a family that walks the talk. And it's interesting when you see someone like Gates talking about how the world is not ready for robotics. Yeah, it's there. Yes, it's coming. But in terms of implications and job displacement and how it's going to affect things, even like that series of Fed projections today, I was up all afternoon running numbers for myself about, you know, is the Fed projection for gradual increasing of interest rates in the next, say, year or so beginning to turn
which
up.
Is the first time in how many years? My gosh.
Oh, yes. But if you look at a long-term chart, the 30-year bond rate, for example, you can see that the 30-year bond rate began to decline starting in about 1982-83, and it's really been in this long wave economic decline of 30 plus years. And what typically happens, and we can get into this later, but what happens is when bond yields, in other words, when interest rates are coming down, a stock price tends to go up. And the reason is that stock prices usually relate to dividends or future growth. And the problem is that, we'll start with a bond. If I give you $100 and say go out and put it in a CD someplace, you're likely to get, what, a buck of interest?
Yeah,
1%.
Maybe.
Right. And what most people don't understand is that stock prices are closely related. And so if I have a stock that is paying a $1 dividend, the likely kind of price range for that stock would be $100. But now that the Fed says in the next year or two or three, we're really going to start seeing interest rates ticking back up, that means that Georgia's investment in a CD will likely begin ticking up back toward 2, maybe even 3, 4%.
Then it comes, you know, when it gets close to 4%, George, it becomes attractive.
It becomes really attractive, but what happens to the stock, which is still paying the dollar dividend because we don't have any real growth in the economy, what ends up happening is that in order to have a 4% yield, the $100 stock has to become a $25 stock. And so when yields begin ticking up, I think we can expect to see a very large decline in the stock market. If we saw interest rates tick up to 5, 6, 7%, which is close to historical kinds of norms, even though the Fed is talking about 2%, as their target for inflation, the reality is if there's a lot of overshoot, then we could really have a mess in the stock market, because dividends in bonds and dividends in stocks really are an interesting interplay to work at understanding. And by the way, even though the Fed has announced today that they're cutting back, they're tapering their quantitative easings by $5 billion on the Treasury side, mm-hmm. $5 billion on the mortgage side for a total of 10, what's really curious there is that when you look at the Federal Reserve's H6 money report, which is one of the statistics that shows how much money is actually being cranked out of the printing presses, what you'll find is that in the last month, M1, or cash and equivalents, is up about at an annualized rate, 24%, which means that, yes, they're really pushing like heck to get things going. And the reason for that is we're so bound up right now with the velocity of money. Think of money, if I give you a dollar and you don't spend it, your dollar, I can give you $2, but if you don't spend it, I can give you dollars all day long, and George will not be stimulating the economy.
No,
right?
It's not going to help.
And that's what's going on right now. And the reason is that because interest rates have been in this long-term decline, people who have a lot of money, say, let's say you had $1 million and the interest rate was 5%, you're going to have some multiple of that when the interest rate gets down to 1%. And so you're going to hoard your money and keep it in large blocks and manage it very conservatively. And the problem we have is that, and now we get to the 15-year problem. The problem is...
When you say 15-year problem, is that 15 years from now?
Yeah, 2019.
Okay.
2019 is when I wake up and I start having nightmares, because I look at robotics and I look at pollution and I look at the effect of a turn in interest rates. I mean, you know, we're at 0.25%. We've been there for a year or two. The employment rate, yeah, it kind of sort of has gone up a little bit, but it's not to where it needs to be. But the problem is we don't have any jobs. And those jobs we have, because of the internet, which doesn't offer any barriers to foreign competition. You know, if I'm a writer, which I happen to be, or at least assert that.
Yes, you are.
if I'm a writer, and I want to farm out my writing, I can find somebody in India or in any other nominally English-speaking country that can crank out material for probably 10 cents on the dollar of what the same work, intellectual work, would cost if I buy it domestically.
Jeez.
And
that's what's happening in everything.
Sure. And that's only part of it. Have you ever heard of a service called Chimp Rewriter?
Nope, I sure haven't.
Okay, well, there's this really cool product called Chimp Rewriter at chimprewriter.com. And what you can do is, rather than have a human rewrite your text, let's say George is going to be on the road. I think you're going to be over in Arkansas here shortly, giving a speech, right?
That's right.
Okay, so when you're over there and you've got this really killer speech and you'd like to do it, in some other venue, but you don't want to do exactly the same speech, but you don't have time to rewrite it, you can plug it into this software, and using artificial intelligence, linguistics, and so forth, it will rewrite for you. And in fact,
jeez,
this is, yeah, I mean, it's just ripping the world a new one. And BBC had a report, one of my readers sent in, that the Los Angeles Times earthquake story that came out this week.
Yeah, the 4-4.
Yeah, the 4-4. That was the first story that a robot wrote breaking news. Ken Schwenke is the, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, Schwenke, is a journalist and a programmer with the LA Times, and he took basically the output off the USGS website, piped it into automatic writing software, and so it comes out with a very readable, fine version of the story. Doesn't have any of the personal stuff, like, you know, talk to Mr. and Mrs. Smith and they said, oh, it broke my teacups, you know, and that kind of earthquake fringe stuff. But the guts of the story, it was there, it was first, and the LA Times beat everybody, because essentially as soon as that story came out, hitting the USGS website and their email list, then bang, it triggered the rewrite, which then, because of magnitude, popped right into the LA Times. Now, that's really, really cool, but if you're in J school and you're spending, what, $40,000 for an undergrad degree,
yeah,
and because you really want a good job, you're going to, you know, throw on another $30,000 and let's do the master's. Well, what does that do to your future?
That's right. Where's the job?
Exactly. And so, over the next 15, this is why I call it the 15-year problem. remember the Talking Heads song "Lifetime Piling Up"? Well, there was a comment I made on one of my websites, either Urban Survival or Peoplenomics, and I said, you know, when you look at history and you get massive technological change, there's a lag time. The lag time can be 5 years to 35 years between when a new technology comes along and when it begins to really rock people's world and change how we live. And just to give you one example, we had a similar wave of technology come through the Western world between 1895 and about 1925. We had radio come along. We had urban electrical systems come along. We had the horse-drawn draft animals get replaced with the traction motors and all the rest of it, tractors in today's terms. Automobiles came along, internal combustion-powered trucks. Ford came up with the assembly line and all those technological changes. For a while, it was great. We had four little depressions that occurred between 1906 and 1921. I think the third one was the beginning of World War One. But what ended up happening was we had the new technologies come along. Then you had this incredible blow-off period where nothing could be finer. I mean, everything was just rocking and rolling. And it's very similar to what we're going through today. We've had the problems of the 1990-91 period. Then we had the internet bubble collapse in 2001-2003. We've had the housing bubble collapse 2007 through 2009. And now we're in kind of this similar to the Roaring Twenties period, where couldn't be better. I mean, we've got easy money, low interest rates, but just like the Great Depression of the 1930s, we've got this hellacious problem 15 years out in our future. And we've got, you know, whatever global warming is, whether it's warming or whether it's climate change, you've got that. You've got peak oil. You've got 3D printing. In fact, there was a company, George, just...
How do you toss 3D printing into this?
Oh, it's gonna wreck jobs. It's gonna destroy jobs.
Uh-huh.
There's an auto company in Europe, a small custom high-end sports car kind of a place. And the word EDAC comes to mind, but I can't call it up from memory right now. But they actually showed off at an auto show in Europe a complete automobile front end that was printed using fused deposition metal printing.
Just amazing technology.
Yeah, it is. And a buddy of mine down in the oil patch in Houston designs drill bits when he's not actually running an offshore rig. And he's just scared because he says nobody understands what it's going to do to the entire world when you can have what amounts to a Star Trek replicator and you can email somebody, you know, George, I'm going to email you a steak. You know?
And there it is. Hold on, George. We're going to take this break. We'll be right back with you as we talk about trends on Coast to Coast AM. Have you watched our television show yet, Beyond Belief? You can. 10 days free, internet-based show. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com, and start watching all the past programs. We've got many. Beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast, George, you're with us, of course. George is a consultant, heads up urbansurvival.com. Let's get back into some of these issues, George, that are going to shake us and rock our world over the next few years.
Well, before the break, I was not joking when I said, give me 10 years and I should be able to email you a steak dinner. Already we've got protein printers in laboratory settings that are doing array printing of proteins for diagnostic purposes and so forth, and it's only a short step from there to printers that can actually print, I don't know, what do you want, a vegetable? Do you want some, what do you want with your steak? Do you want some fries?
Well, you know, what are they printing it from?
Raw protein material.
Amazing. And they just put it together.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not really that far from where the modern French fry is. A lot of people don't realize that many of the French fries that you get at XYZ fast food are actually potatoes that have been peeled and mashed and then extruded and formed so they look like perfect French fries. And so they just come out a nozzle, basically, and chop, 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 and now you've got pieces of fries, and off you go, freeze them real quickly, throw them in the fryer, they crisp up, they're uniform in texture, they don't have any flaws, there's no skin. That's how it works. Now, picture taking proteins from pretty much any kind of animal or vegetable you want, put them into, remember your inkjet printer has like, you know, three or four different color cartridges.
Yeah.
So we'll put a little vegetable protein in one cartridge and we'll put a little meat protein in another. We'll put a couple of flavors in these two cartridges and print.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's mind bending, but you see, that's the kind of thing that will likely be here in the next 15 years. And nobody's thinking about, well, how's that going to really change my life? It's like, are you kidding? Robotics. My wife and I went over to Arizona here a week or so back and, you know, visit kids and practice back on Tony Davidson's thing about luck at a local casino over there we like. Anyway.
Did you get lucky?
As a matter of fact, yes. And I won some money gambling, too.
No.
The trip back on Interstate 40 was interesting because there's all these trucks that run up and down I-40. They come out of L.A. and you see them going up into the hills, and they drop off goods from China and Asia and so forth all over the midsection of the country. And we were watching the trucks and thinking about Google's self-driving cars. And the question is, how is the arrival of the self-driving truck going to change how Interstate 40's economic infrastructure works? It's, you know, interstate highways are almost a little ecosystem of their own.
Yeah, but don't you get rid of our truck drivers. They're the backbone of this country.
I'm telling you, of course they are. But you see, that's the problem that nobody's really ready for. You know, people go, well, it's really cool that Google has got self-driving cars in Nevada and a couple of other places that are driving, you know, sight-impaired people around and getting them to work and so forth. That's really good stuff. But what they don't sit back and think about is, what if you have that same technology and you put it into a truck? Now what happens to all those truck stops? What happens to those motels? What happens to even, oh, the diesel mechanics? Because these things will have logs. They'll be self-diagnosing. I mean, that future that we have taken for granted, that a CDL, a combination driver license for driving a semi, is going to be one of those enduring American values. I think it should be. But unfortunately, when I look at the scatter charts, when I put the data up about automation on the highways, George, it gets to be frightening. I mean, there are millions of delivery and truck drivers. And a while back, you saw the thing about Amazon was looking at considering drones for lightweight deliveries. And already a good portion of the book industry is sliding by the wayside because Amazon's got such a slick delivery system with Kindle. And that's going to tear apart some of the higher education printing. Right now, textbook printing is, you know, it's like printing gold if you, you know, but why do that if you can just pop a PDF into Kindle? Where's the value? And if you have, and I mentioned this earlier, Chimp Rewriter, and I can shove a textbook from a competitor in, rewrite it so it maybe is the same material. How do you prove infringement? Because the basic information, like, you know, the chemistry tables, that stuff's in the public domain. What's not in the public domain is how the author puts it together.
Well, look what the Internet, George, has done to newspapers across the
country. Killing them. Yeah. It's killing them. Because what ends up happening in the newspapers is they have very high costs of content acquisition. And guys like myself can sit in the outback of East Texas – log into any government agency, typically with like the Labor Department, 7:30 on key mornings, I've got the same access to information that the big East Coast papers have, except I've got it, I copy paste the highlights onto my website, it's delivered 10 minutes later, and there's no paywall to get through.
That's right. I don't think anybody under the age of 25 has looked at a newspaper in God knows how long.
Well, and that's the whole point. Who needs it? Craigslist has killed classifieds. You know, and if Craigslist has it, you know, gosh, there's Angie's List, there's Kijiji, there's just all these other sources that have popped up that are slowly eating the lunch.
When's the last time you went to one of your local malls? There are, you know, stores closed like crazy.
I don't go to malls anymore. The best deal in the world, I'll tell you, there's two deals out there, and credit to Jeff Bezos. He's another guy. You know, if I had to pick...
Founder of Amazon.
If I had to pick three guys who get it about the future, it would be Gates, it would be Bezos, and Sergey at Google. Yeah, I mean, because these guys get it. They know what the potential of their technology is. But Amazon, you talk about going to the malls. I don't. I don't have time.
Well, you're right. I mean, a lot of people will shop online now. If they don't need it like today, just order it. It'll be delivered. You'll get it in about 3 or 4 days, and so be it.
And for even though they're going to up their prices, I think, about a year from now, Amazon Prime, which includes the free shipping on most products, also includes a video wrapper, so you get access to some tens of thousands of movies online. And in San Francisco, Seattle, and Los Angeles, Amazon has this really neat grocery service called Fresh. And basically, you log into Amazon Fresh, you have your list of what you need to get at the store, and it'll prompt you on things, need toilet paper this week, George? And it'll give you everything you need to run your home delivered. And my daughter in Seattle clicks on hers and has delivery on Thursday morning between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. For her and her significant other, they don't go to the store. They don't have to. The store comes to
them. Well,
now
what if you need that little can of tomato sauce? You're going to go to the store, you're going to order it on Amazon?
No, my kids have been around me because I'm a dyed-in-the-wool prepper. We've always got spare cans of tomato sauce. You know, we run basically, depending on item, anywhere from 3 weeks to 3 years in the future on different goods.
Well, that's smart, though.
Yeah, but see, that's what's changing because the inventory that used to employ so many people in the grocery industry, stockers and shelvers and inventory takers, that stuff is dramatically changing. I did a project for a client slash friend in an East Coast food cooperative, and they were looking at putting in a food scoring system so the consumers would know when they go to the store, it's like, okay, is this organic? Is it local? Is it fresh? And so forth. And it would basically score the quality of the goods. There are some food scoring systems out there, but they get off into the weeds talking about corporate responsibility and issues because they don't really want to talk about inorganic or chemical additives or food coloring and stuff like that. So, but what ends up happening is in a lot of smaller grocery stores, they still have not connected the cash register to the ordering process. And so when you go into a small mom-and-pop store, they're likely doing inventory 4 times a year on a quarterly basis.
Yeah.
But in the big stores like Walmart...
It's instant.
Instant. You bet. George goes in, gets a gallon of milk, ka-ching, out the back end comes, order that replacement gallon of milk and get it on the shelf by 7 o'clock because George just took our next-to-the-last gallon of milk, and it will be there. And the other thing that those guys are doing, and this is, again, retail sales. I mean, we've got millions of people in America. I enjoy going shopping, not because I need to buy stuff. I mean, I do, of course, but I go shopping for the experience. My wife can walk into a store and spend 2 hours, not spend a dime, but look at fashion, look at trends, talk to people, see what's going on. You know, it's a social thing. But in the big stores like Walmart, the training or the adaptation process to self-service checkout is well underway. And I think it's only a matter of time until McDonald's and a lot of the other fast food operations go to that same self-service model. And that, George, gets me to one of my favorite topics, which is MomentumMachines.com.
Well, but let me, before we get into that, here's a little story with me. I wanted to buy some new jeans, right?
Okay.
I know my sizes. So I went online and I ordered it. And they showed up, had them shipped to my spot.
Yep.
And guess what? They were the button-up kind instead of the zipper kind.
Oh.
And it, there's no way, I'm going to fidget around with that thing every day. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
So there was an internet faux pas that just didn't work.
On the other hand, I've had situations like that where I've ordered something from Amazon, one click, 10 seconds with customer service, return number, problem fixed, new one shipped, the problem is solved. If I did the same thing in town, like I can go into town, buy a pair of jeans, you know, say, oh, okay, that's a 92-inch waist and 12-inch inseam or whatever.
92-inch waist?
No, I'm joking, George.
I was going to say, you're a baby elephant?
Exactly. But, okay, so maybe it's 36 or maybe it's 38. But I could get it home and I could have the same problem. But instead of solving it with a click, I would have to drive back to town, go through the return process and all that. So the other side of it, though, is I happen to know what size my feet are because after 60 years, you know, you kind of know what your
feet are. You should know. That's
should,
right.
Yeah. And so there's this one kind of shoe that I really like. And every year I order a pair. And I do it online. I can't even get them within 100 miles of where I live in Texas.
Well, that's convenient.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's not convenient because I do a lot of shopping that way, too. It's just that when something goes awry, it's a pain.
It's really a pain. It can be. But the real problem is not George's or either George, either of our inconveniences right now. It's 15 years from now when they have worked out all the little things like the note that says Z for zipper, B for button, you know, and they start error trapping. And
well, they better be careful because if they keep pushing technology the way you say it's going to go, you're going to have a lot of ticked off people. They're going to be upset.
They're not only going to be upset, but they're going to be in a revolutionary mood. But that gets us into another technology, the revolution technology.
Precisely.
You know, and you look at what just happened in Ukraine. I would bet a beer that you could not have had the Ukraine uprising without androids. Because there's so much of that, the same technology, the same technique that 3 and 4 years ago we were worried about flash mobs invading merchants in New York. Remember that series of stories?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
they're still doing that.
Yeah. The same thing is going on, though, at the international political level. In fact, 2 years ago, do you know about First Monday?
Yeah.
Okay, First Monday is this peer-reviewed journal on the internet, and it's all about neat stuff. And back, I think it was volume 15, number 9, September 2010, there was an article by Lysenko and D'Souza called "The Role of Internet Information Flows and Technologies in Electoral Revolutions: The Case of Ukraine's Orange Revolution." And what these guys did is they reconstructed the role of the internet and mobile technology in promoting not only the Orange Revolution, which was Ukraine's first attempt at electronic uprising, but they also looked at the Green Revolution, which almost was an electronic uprising in Iran in 2009. And what most people don't realize is that in addition to Ukraine and Crimea, now that it's broken away and is part of Russia, we have a lot of other electronic uprisings that are in play right now. There's three that come to mind. Did you realize that Venice is voting to secede from Italy?
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay, how about the election coming in Catalonia to break away from Spain?
Well, you got a lot of upset people. Hey, they're talking about California being divided into three separate entities.
Oh, absolutely. At the seat of the European Union, there's a Flemish separatist vote coming up. So, I mean, the good news for the corporatist guys, the guys who were early adopters and figured out how to get U.S. labor replaced with diamond hour labor overseas, they got the upper hand initially. But there's this big swing of history going on where the control is beginning to come back to the local groups that understand technology. And in terms of what it means for America, I've been saying it now, so it'll probably be 10 to 15 years, but there is no longer a reason for most senators and members of Congress to spend all of their time in Washington, D.C., when they could be spending time in their home district talking to people in their constituency and voting electronically. I mean, let's face it, we're doing stock transactions, we're doing retirement account management, we're buying treasury bonds, and we're banking online. And now, thanks to the ACA, all of our healthcare crap is online. So why are we paying to send everybody to Washington where they are convenient prey for what I call the K Street Mafia that is buying, buying legislation is a polite way of putting it.
Well, it's going to be an interesting road for us.
Yeah, indeed. And the problem is, like you say, there's going to be a lot of people wake up one day and go, holy smokes, the self-driving truck is coming, or the company Momentum. I really like this company. I don't even think they're publicly traded, but it's Momentum.
You might even have the robotic postal delivery thing.
Oh, yeah. And they almost certainly will cut back postal delivery to every other day.
That'll happen.
Because the internet has replaced it. The junk mail in the mailbox is now the junk mail in inbox.
That's right.
And outfits like Momentum Machines are making machines that will build a better hamburger than a human.
People are paying their bills online, George. In the old days, they'd write a check and put their stamp on it, and off it would go.
Off it would go. And how soon before there was actually talk at one time of the post office trying to take over and tax email in order to pay for the convenience.
That's not going to happen.
No, it isn't going to happen. And very interestingly, the U.S. has begun to cede some of its control over the internet to the U.N.
I had part of that story. George, hold on. We're already at the top of the hour. We're going to come back and talk with you about more trends that you see in the future. And then at our final hour, we'll take phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll continue talking about robotics and other trends when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.